Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Get the Hillman Morning Show on demand. Podcasts and more are always online and on your schedule at waaf.com.
We'll need some gorgeous studio lighting to show off that 5-inch HD screen.
Oh, yeah?
And some endless exotic beach for that 8-megapixel rear camera and long-lasting battery life.
Sure.
See, we just don't have the time to cover it all in 30 seconds.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Switch to Cricket and get a free Samsung Galaxy Amp Prime 3. Smile, you're on Cricket.
And it's $418.19 while supplies last. Requires number ported, a new line, minimum $30 per month. First month service charge due at sale. Taxes and restrictions apply. One-time fees may apply. See CricketWireless.com for details.
Well, spring is going to be here before we know it, and that means you can take advantage of the Spring Into Savings program from East Coast Metal Roofing. With the Spring Into Savings program, you are going to save 10% off a brand new East Coast Metal roof. It's the last roof you will ever have to put on your home. They offer 100% financing, and they are an Energy Star partner. That means you're also going to save not only the 10% on the roof, but every month when it comes to your energy bills. They are made right here in the USA. They're Permalock aluminum shingles, reflect radiant heat. They don't rust, they don't rot, and they can be installed on any style home. If you live in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Connecticut, or even some parts of Maine, then I don't know what you're waiting for. It's time to get that new roof and the last roof that you will ever put on your home. Call 844-611-ECMR. That's 844-611-ECMR. Or you can go to eastcoastmetalroofing.com. East Coast Metal Roofing, your lifetime roofing solution.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A reminder that you can listen to Ask an Attorney on your Amazon Echo. Just ask Alexa to play WAAF and turn your smart speaker into a radio. And it's 9:03, and Larry, the lawyer, is here with some legal advice this morning. Of course, a disclaimer, he is not acting in an official capacity as your attorney. And this texter actually would like to know why some lawyers refer to themselves as Esquire and some don't.
They're trying to get laid.
Is that
on the radio?
I think, yes. So is there any, what is an Esquire?
We're all Esquires.
You're all Esquires. Yes.
Okay. When you become an attorney, you become an Esquire. I don't know. That came from the king a long time ago.
Okay.
There you go.
Here's 978 text. My boyfriend's job closed for a week due to a power failure, and they refused to pay him for that time, and he has to use vacation or time for that. Is that legal?
I'm going to tell you, before we get to that, I would break up with this girl.
Really?
Yes. Why do you want your girlfriend calling a radio show to find out why you didn't get paid two months ago?
Well, maybe she cares.
Maybe she cares about something totally different, Greg. But the short answer is, and I love people like this, your boss isn't making money for a week because of a natural disaster. His business is shut down. But meanwhile, he's paying the rent, he's paying the internet, all the things that go along with that business, but your boyfriend has the week off.
Mm-hmm.
He can use his vacation time, he can use his sick time, but why should he get paid when it's nothing that the boss did? Mm-hmm. These are the people that drive me insane. It's insane that she would ask that question.
Well,
am I wrong?
I think who probably inconvenienced them. They had to pay their bills and
I get
stuff.
That.
And they,
how do you think the boss felt?
Do you think? Yeah, the boss. Hey, how about he goes out of business because he has to fork up a bunch of salary for no reason?
Because Ohio Gas Company blew up his business. He should pay employees for the next 6 months, right? I mean, I guess that's where we're at in this world.
Larry, my company recently changed our benefit program to include 100% company-paid health insurance. The catch is that we all had to sign a contract stating there would be an equal reduction in our hourly wage to compensate for this new benefit. Is this something that that they are allowed to do?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't have to sign the contract. You don't have to take the insurance to keep your old wages. But, I mean, look, in Massachusetts, under the Obamacare and under this state, I think an employer has to pay 77% of the insurance no matter what. So, you know, we're talking about really 23% difference here. So I think you got to look at the cost of that insurance versus what the wages are. But the bottom line is the company can do it if you sign it.
This is Mark on the Framingham Ford studio line. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hey.
I got a question. My wife passed away in 2017.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
She had a 401k that the company cannot find my name listed as a beneficiary. So she had some medical bills and credit cards that were all in her name. How long should I wait to try to file for an estate to claim that money?
So she didn't have a will, no estate planning?
No, she didn't, unfortunately.
Yeah. First of all, I'm sorry about your loss. It sounds like you're a young man and nobody should go that early. But let me say this. If she's your spouse and there's no will, you're entitled to a statutory, I think it's $100,000 off the top and then probably 50% of the balance of the estate. So you can still file an estate, Greg, in Massachusetts without having a will. Instead of getting an executor appointed, you'd have an administrator appointed.
Even though he's not on the four, they can't find his name.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's still part of the estate.
Okay.
So, I mean, a lot of people don't have beneficiaries on their 401ks. They do on the life insurance more often than not, but on the 401ks, some people just don't do it.
Should you put a beneficiary on your 401k or
let it? Well, I mean, here's the issue. Ultimately, it comes down to taxes. One of the reasons that you want to hire an attorney to do an estate plan is to minimize the taxes that you have to pay upon death. So, for example, life insurance. If I have $1 million life insurance policy, Greg, and I have a beneficiary and I put it through a trust, never goes through the probate court system. It passes. There's no tax on it. The minute it goes into the probate system and it's part of your estate assets, that value is going to be calculated to figure out if you owe any estate taxes. So the asset is still an asset of her estate. And it's going to be distributed to the statutory beneficiaries, of which a husband would certainly get the lion's share. And if they had children, they would get some too.
Does that help you out, Mark?
Yeah, my question is, like, there was creditors, like credit card company and the medical bills. Do they have right to attach if I file for an estate?
Or is there a way around it? They have one year to file a notice of claim from the time you file the estate to the time it ends.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, I mean, look. You have to do it at some point in time if you're gonna get that money, and there's no sense keeping that money there. Ultimately, it'll end up in the unclaimed property division of the state, and it's going to be good luck getting it then.
Here's an interesting one: a 617 text. If I am summoned to someone else's divorce hearing, what would happen if I don't show up?
Well, it depends if I summons you or somebody else does. I mean, listen. When you get summons, you're under a legal obligation to show up. A judge could issue a bench warrant for your arrest. That is the extreme. But I will tell you, having and heading to a trial right now where witnesses don't show up, in the real world, almost no consequences anymore.
There aren't.
Unreal.
No. I mean, how many times have you heard anybody get charged with perjury after going on a witness stand and blatantly lying? How many times have you heard somebody have
a bench
warrant?
They don't even do it in Congress.
It's what I'm talking about. We're in kind of a warped place right now, Greg, where there's no consequences anymore.
Have you, as an attorney, ever been sentenced to jail?
Oh, Greg.
Have you ever been in contempt of court?
I have.
You have?
Surprise. I have.
Did you actually go and did you actually have to...
So I was a brand new lawyer.
Yeah.
And I was doing a criminal case, and they brought my client in on a probation violation. The judge at that point in time said, I'm going to put him in for 90 days. And I, being a green little lawyer, said, well, you can't do that. He's entitled to a hearing. And the judge said, says who? And I said, the United States Constitution. That's who. And he said, well, I'm wearing the black robe, so he's doing 90 days. And the thoughts that were in my head then came out of my mouth. Oh. And I said, just because you're wearing the robe doesn't make you smart.
Oh.
At which point in time you could hear a pin drop in that courtroom, which was loaded with lawyers and people. And the judge looked up at me and he said, "What did you just say?" And I realized, well, got to own it. I just said it. It's recorded and everybody in this place just heard it. So I said it again. At which point in time he said, "Well, I'm smarter than you because you're going to jail." And I said, "Yeah, right." At which point in time they put the cuffs on and they put my client into the lockup.
How long were you in there for?
Good 4 hours. This is the best part of the story.
Four hours?
So I'm going into the lockup and they have these little side doors. So my client had already been gone in and he knew I was getting thrown in jail.
Yeah.
So he told the other 40 drunks in the drunk tank. I opened the door. I walked through. The place erupts.
Oh, great.
I look back at the judge. He was purple. He was so mad.
You're the lawyer of the people. The lawyer of the people.
I was in there for 4 hours, Greg, and this is the embarrassing part. Judge knew my dad. So he said he sent message to my father that I wasn't getting out until my father came down. Yeah, so imagine being a 26-year-old lawyer, knowing that you were right, but you were wrong on what you said, and then your father's going to come down and get you out of jail.
Oh, man.
Quiet car ride home?
Not really.
Obscure reference, my cousin Vinny. Yes. Hello,
several times.
Hello, Jack.
Hey, good morning, yo, man.
What's up, Jack?
Matt, you're a laser show, bro. I just got a quick question here on mortgages. So my mortgage will let me prepay every month, but they won't let me drop down. Let's say, you know, if I want to drop down $1,000 in the middle of the month or something like that, is that legal to do? Can they do that?
They won't let him pay. He wants to pay $1,000 in the middle of the month. They want the whole payment at the same time or something.
So I pay it on a schedule, right?
Yeah.
But they'll take a little bit more every month. But let's say I hit the lottery and I get $5,000. I want to throw a couple thousand down. They said, no, you can't do that.
That's not right. Unless you have a prepayment penalty.
Yeah.
At which point in time you can still do it, but you get a penalty for doing it.
But they want the interest, right?
Of course they do. As you know, Greg, if you take a mortgage and you double up your very first payment when you get that mortgage, you take 7 years off the life of that 30-year loan, on a typical 30-year loan, just by doubling up on the first payment.
On the first payment, right.
And keep in mind, the way that these bank cartels work...
You sound like Elizabeth
Warren.
Sorry,
did I just say that out loud again? It's not a good morning for me, Greg. I'm going to end up sued.
Yes.
But basically, the first 10 years of any 30-year mortgage, you're paying the bank, you know, high on the interest, low on the principal. So when you start prepaying these things, they lose a lot of their interest over the last, 7 years of payments and interest is a lot of money for them to lose. So they do not like that, but they cannot stop it.
Okay, let's see. If you want to text, you can text 97107. And you can call 617-764-9223. This is Mike during Ask an Attorney. Hello, Mike.
Hi, good morning. I'm a landlord in New Hampshire, and I had a tenant that gave me no notice except for a text saying that she's moving out. She left all her property behind. How long do I have to store that?
So, admittedly, I'm not licensed in New Hampshire. I'm only licensed in the Commonwealth, so I technically and legally can't give you legal advice. But having said that, we don't give legal advice here. We give opinions.
We give opinions, yeah.
So I would tell you that if you're going to do it in Massachusetts, technically, legally, you're supposed to call the sheriff, do an eviction, and have our stuff locked up with the sheriff. But, I mean, look, if she's not back in another 30, 60 days, I would just move it out into a storage facility, and a couple months after that, have an auction. It's all gone.
Yeah.
Not your problem anymore.
That
this
works
is not
for me.
Legal advice. This might get you in trouble.
Right.
But it's really in the real world.
I mean, if somebody disappears from paying the rent, they're probably not coming back.
I don't think you have a problem there.
Yeah, apply to Storage Wars.
But what I'm telling you could get you in trouble. But at the same time, there's a greater than not chance that, as Greg said, she's not coming back.
Yeah. Here's a text asking if Larry the lawyer is single. I love him. That's a 207 text.
Where is that?
That's Maine, my adopted home continent of Maine.
I am not single, but in Maine I don't think anything matters.
Are you single in Maine?
Doesn't matter. Brother, sister, aunt, uncle, girlfriend, whatever. Don't matter. But
all right.
No, I'm not.
Larry Army is here, Larry the lawyer, and we have a few moments left during Ask an Attorney this week. This is Ed. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, good morning. Quick question on labor law.
Yeah.
I was out on disability leave, medical disability. And I work for canceled my insurance through the company without letting me know. I got sick, went to a doctor, and they pulled the insurance and said, you're canceled.
You were out on disability leave, and they canceled your insurance without letting you know?
Correct. No, no COBRA identification, no nothing. I just went to the doctor,
sick as a dog. And the guy said, your insurance is canceled.
Did you leave the place? You were out on disability, so you weren't fired or you didn't quit or anything like that?
Correct. It was a long-term disability.
Yeah. Private policy or through the state? Like, did the state put you on those SSDI, or was it through some policy that your company had?
No, it was private insurance that I paid for and contributed to. And my understanding was you can't just cancel someone's insurance without offering them Cobra.
It's 18 months of Cobra they're supposed to send you.
You do have to offer the Cobra that they could pay on their own or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the question, I guess the question would be, did your address change? Did the notice go to the wrong address? You know, those are the things you got to look at. But having said that, you know, I think a well-placed call to your human resource department with the doctor's bills should resolve this issue.
Hello, John.
Hey, good morning, Greg. Happy New Year.
Same to you, John. John?
That was the end of that.
Go ahead.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, question for Larry.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Larry, listen, the reason why that I'm calling you is because in September, I was parked in my brand new vehicle that I drove back from Nashville, and a woman slammed into my driver's side. I'm a professional musician, and she slammed right into me. I ended up going to the emergency room. My mom came and took me. The reason why my mom took me was because a lot of my money went flying in the car. I didn't want them to steal my stuff. The cop did not even give the woman a citation. She hit me so hard in my driver's side that she went up on two wheels and landed down up the street and came out of her car talking on her cell phone. After they looked at the security camera, they said that I had a guardian angel watching over me, that I should have been dead because I was 3 seconds away. I was about to open the door, and then I turned to look, and that's when she slammed into me. I've been doing physical therapy since September. I was out of work, not because of the crash. Her insurance company knows that she's at fault, but I also, I think it's my left limbrium in my shoulder, I have some torn tissue in there, and I've been in pain and trying to drum with the left arm and not be able to, you know, drum like this. This woman has caused like a lot of damage to me, and the question I would want to know is, my attorney is saying not to go, she doesn't want to sue yet. How long do I go on before I can actually sue? But her insurance company said that she has six figures. And I'd like to know, for something like this, for the pain and the suffering that I've been going through, the nightmares, the physical therapy, is this a good case on my part once we go to court?
I can answer for Larry, sue now. That's always his answer, sue now.
Well, Greg's right, sue now. But having said that, in this case, and I think we had this call a couple weeks ago, Greg, the thing about your injuries is they're not complete yet. You don't know the true scope of the damage and whether or not any of that damage is going to be permanent. You certainly have a good scope of damages right now, and that lost wages for not being able to drum is certainly a part of it. But I think what your lawyer is probably doing is he's waiting the 3-year term of the statute of limitations till you get to a medical end result.
Oh, so
which
it's,
a lot of times makes sense.
Yeah.
But if, you know, one thing you're entitled to, you know, under Massachusetts law, the insurance companies are required, once you make a demand under the appropriate statute, to send you the coverage selection page of the person that hit you, which will tell you that it's not just six figures, it's $100,000 or it's $500,000. You should know the limits, because if it's $100,000, you should probably start suing now, because it sounds like you have $100,000 in damage.
Yes.
I know this is overseas, but does Rick Allen losing his arm and then continuing to drum with one arm for Def Leppard set any kind of precedent for that? I don't know this gentleman's particular injuries, but
well,
you know, guy's got one arm.
You know, you make a fine
out.
Point. I was just, you know, to be honest with you, Greg, when that call was coming in, I was thinking to myself, oh, God, please let this not be the guy that my daughter hit the other day.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
But it wasn't. Woo!
Oh, no.
Winning.
Let's see. Here's a 774 text. I had a complaint with a dentist, and they just sent me a letter saying that she had agreed with the dentistry board for working probation. I'm wondering if I can now ask for a refund because of the work that was done and paid for.
So he went to a dentist.
She...
Dentist screwed something up?
She went on... the
Double
dentist,
secret probation?
The dentistry board put her on working probation. Does he have he or she have a case to go back and now say, I want a refund because you're on probation?
I mean, I don't know if a refund is necessary in the cards, but if there's any damages, that's certainly there. I mean, her being put on probation through the dentistry board is proof that she did something wrong.
Yeah.
So you can use that moving forward. Again, Greg, a lot of times if you just call these people or send a little letter saying, hey, you know, I don't want to sue you. I feel like you've been punished enough being sent to the dentistry probation division, but I want my money back. You know, they're going to pay you.
Here's a 702 text, I think.
Vegas.
I purchased a house in November. The town just billed me for $1,300 of the seller's back property taxes and told me it's now my responsibility. Is that true?
So if taxes are unpaid, they go to the homeowner who currently owns the home. Having said that, you really need to talk to your moron attorney because almost every purchase and sales agreement has an apportionment of the taxes from the closing date.
Yeah.
And somebody didn't do it. I bet they didn't have an attorney.
I bet maybe they
did. Save a couple bucks to spend $1,300. Really smart.
Geez. Maybe did it without an attorney.
People, never buy real estate without a lawyer.
Really? Never buy real estate without a lawyer.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
It's the biggest purchase you're ever going to make.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. I mean, you know this. How many houses have you bought?
Oh, it's just one.
Really?
I don't have a... yes, it's a good idea to have a... And also, you know, you want somebody who's doing the title searches and all that stuff for you.
You want somebody to sue if a problem like this comes up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're buying insurance when you hire an attorney. You have title insurance, which doesn't cover this kind of an issue. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, but more importantly, this kind of mistake typically doesn't happen with an attorney. If you had an attorney that made this mistake, he's a moron. Call him or her.
Well, you have to be Bezos to have the I don't give an F attitude.
That's right. Here's 617 text. Speaking of houses, we bought our home 2 years ago and were told the roof was 5 years old. In the previous storm, it started to leak, and it appears that the shingles may have been newer, but the roof was old. Mm-hmm. Do we have any recourse here?
So I assume that if you bought the house, you did a home inspection. That's a contract between you and the home inspector. I don't know if you went up to your attic, but you know, typically one of the ways you can tell is if you look in the attic and there's nail holes that are empty, that shows you that they took off something up top. But it also shows you that the subroof hasn't been replaced. So, you know, they should look for things like water stains and those kinds of things. So you're not potentially going to be able to sue the person that installed the roof because there's no direct contract between you and them. But your homeowner should have figured this out.
This
homeowner's inspection.
Whoever
did the inspection.
Hello, Andrew.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen.
Hey.
Danielle and
hi.
The counselor. Hi. So
I'm the only non-gentleman in the room.
Counselor.
I'm just teasing you, buddy.
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
So my dad just died last week, and my mother and my dad were together for 55 years. My mom is not a citizen, and I heard somewhere one time where she would be taxed on any estate that they had on my father's portion. Is that true?
It's over a certain amount, I think, and I don't know what the number is, to be completely honest with you. I think it's $5 million, but I think under $5 million, you have a personal exemption you don't have to pay tax on. What's the value of the estate?
Probably somewhere, you know, it's really just the home that they owned outright, which is valued somewhere maybe, you know, between $800,000 and $900,000 tops, absolute tops.
So if her name was on the deed, you don't have to do anything with the probate court. If it was tenants by the entirety or joint tenants or tenants in common, it when he passed, and by the way, condolences for your loss. And
thank you. Know,
certainly sorry to hear that, but it sounds like your parents lived a great life. You know, have the ability to do that.
Okay, so can do that. All right. Time for one or two more. This is Peter on Ask an Attorney with Larry the Lawyer. What's up, Peter?
Good morning, show. Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
You got it.
Try to make it quick, as simple as possible. I own a rental property with my ex-wife, and I had evicted some tenants, and basically it's been about 4 months since I've gotten any rent, and I've had some major repairs, not just to the house that they trashed, but, you know, the furnace, septic, stuff like that. But she refuses to split any of the costs with me. Do I have a right to take her to court? For half those costs?
So you own a rental property with the ex-wife. She's not contributing. You're not getting any rent coming in. You're making the repair. She's not doing it. Can he sue her to go and get half of that?
You should sue her. She's your ex-wife.
Listen, you're going to say that, right?
You're going to say that. Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and you're going to do divorces go up or down around Valentine's Day?
What proposals go up,
right?
Which means that ultimately one out of two of those proposals ends up in my lap.
Listen, you do a lot of divorces.
I do.
Any advice for those who might be thinking about proposing tomorrow? Because it's a very popular day when it comes to proposing.
So let me tell you this, Greg. Let's talk about the engagement ring rule for a second.
Yes.
If you give a woman an engagement ring and she
notice
does...
Notice Danielle's ears perked right up.
I did notice that. And not
Larry,
that,
are you
going to
mention something
like
about
tiger.
A holiday, maybe? Mm-hmm. Well,
so what I was going to say is that if you give a ring on a birthday or Christmas or a holiday or an occasion, it's a non-returnable gift. Mm. Whereas if you give it on, let's say, next Friday, a regular day, and the marriage doesn't move forward, you get the ring back. So my advice is at 12:01 on the 15th, oh, that's when you give that
that's
ring.
That's when
out.
You give. So
by the way,
not,
that's when that, I almost said a bad word.
Don't propose. You're saying do not propose on Valentine's Day or Christmas or
listen,
any other.
I'm all for love, buddy.
Yeah.
Go for it, baby.
Go for it.
Propose.
Okay. All right. And then you advocate for a prenup also, right?
And
any every
yes, sir.
Every case?
Yeah. Well, not every case. Not if she's got more than you.
Lawrence.
I mean, it really depends on who my client is, Greg.
Lawrence.
I mean, Danielle, isn't that why you hire an attorney for
yes.
that kind of solid advice?
Exactly.
I mean, Nick Lachey, right?
Yes.
Yes.
He signed the prenup.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. And then she blew up and, or they didn't sign a prenup.
Right.
Yeah, she didn't want the prenup because he was bigger than her.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. All right, here's the last one from Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys, how we doing?
What's up, Mike?
Larry, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate this segment. It's a great segment. I wanted to ask you questions, or a question, rather, about a predicament that my mom is in. My grandfather passed in the 90s. My grandmother passed over 15 years ago. They left my aunt as the executor of the estate. She is a lazy person. She still has not settled anything. The house that they own has gone into shambles. And my mom has gone back and forth trying to get her to sell it. And she just drags her feet on everything. So my mom asked her attorney, who is not a real estate attorney, if she could just say, I don't want anything to do with the house. I don't want it to be my liability. Can I just sign it over to her? I don't want any money. I don't want anything. And her attorney basically said, you can't do that.
Well,
is that?
This is why you call Ask a Lawyer, isn't it?
Correct.
Because that advice is incorrect.
Okay.
What your mom can do is she can disclaim any inheritance that she's getting under the will. You don't have to take something that's given to you under a will. So there's a disclaimer that you can file. But your other option is your mom can also file to have your aunt removed as the executrix and have her appointed because she's not doing her job. So there's two options here. Go and take control of the situation or just give it up.
I think the reason why she hasn't done the, you know, to file to get my aunt taken off from being the executor because it's going to involve litigation, which she just can't afford. And rather than have to go into that you know, process, spend more money than she's already spent on this situation.
Well, you know that you just hit the essence of why her lawyer most likely said, do not do that.
That's
yeah.
it. That's
keep the
that's,
case going, baby.
Exactly,
prime the pump.
Yeah, prime the pump.
That's exactly what I told her. I'm like, she just wants more money out of you. Just
Have her go down to the courthouse. Go to the clerk of the probate court. There's a disclaimer form, I'm sure, somewhere down there tucked away that they'll hand you. Fill it out, take you 10 minutes, and then you're done.
Final follow-up question, because we were talking about Valentine's Day and the rings. This is a 617 text, kind of sad, from a woman. I was left at the altar recently by my fiancé. He wants the ring back. Is he entitled?
Survey says.
Is he entitled?
Nope.
Is he entitled to the ring back if he left her at the...
You can't give somebody a ring and then leave him at the altar and say the wedding didn't happen. I mean,
come
on.
No,
keep that ring, honey. Sell it and go away. Have a nice 3-week vacation on him.
So he doesn't get, even though it didn't, the wedding didn't happen.
She should sue him for intentional infliction of emotional distress.
I love it.
Negligent infliction of emotional distress.
Yes.
All those things. Any human being that does that,
leave somebody at the altar.
And by the way, she should be grateful. She should have got down on her knees and thanked the baby Jesus.
Yeah, that
because this was ending in a divorce.
Yes. All right.
So he did her a favor.
Sell the ring and take me to Sandals. Yes. Payback. He'd yes. hate it.
Yes. By the way, yes. make sure you get at least 10 grand for that ring because the bar bill is going to be half of that.
Huge.
A texter says, Executrix is their new favorite dirty word. Mm. See, ooh, I like that.
Oh yeah, you know what's funny is Danielle perked up when you said that, too.
I actually like that.
I think everybody likes that.
All right, good luck in court today. All right, thanks, Larry.
I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.
Larry the lawyer, every once in a while, ask an attorney on this show, and it's armyandroach.com. That's Larry's website, armyandroach.com. We'll be right back. We are about to do our best to get to the bottom of the biggest pizza controversy in our country since... The Noid. We're about to be joined by the world's foremost expert on pizza, a pizza historian. Stand by. Today's weather brought to you by the Progressive Insurance New England Boat Show, and it's actually improving. Temperature's going to get up into the upper 40s, and there should be some melting and such today. So. Better day today than yesterday. Better drive home this afternoon. Oh. Crossing fingers. And this evening, it should be a better commute home with things warming up a little bit. Come see what is making waves for 2019 at the Progressive Insurance New England Boat Show, presented by West Marine, now through February 17th at the Boston Convention and Events Center. Tickets and show details at newenglandboatshow.com. Joining us now, pizza historian, lecturer at the Pizza Museum, mm-hmm. Peter Regas. Peter, good morning.
It's a pleasure. Good morning, Boston.
We were talking on the show yesterday about this controversy over where the first pizzeria ever was and whether or not New York has a claim to it. I will tell you this. Yeah. There was an unvalidated claim made on this show months ago that the very first pizzeria in the United States was actually here in the north end of Boston. As a historian, do you have a degree in pizza or like what is it? I feel like I should have one based on everything I've eaten, but
The amount of pizzas I had in college, I probably should get a minor in pizza. And right now my background was in math and physics. So okay. It was, only a hobby in college.
So can you weigh in on this a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, it all goes to how you define a pizzeria. So Southern Italians, and specifically Italians from the Campania region, brought their culture and brought their foodways to the United States starting about 1870. So it would be logical for someone to make a pizza on the corner. They could have fried it, and, you know, it goes to your definition of what is a pizzeria. Certainly when Southern Italians took over bakeries, and started having ovens and making dough mainly for bread, it's entirely probable they were making pizza on the side too, as a sort of a side product. Now, technically, that's a pizzeria. But what we're really sort of looking at is the bakers and the restaurateurs who are making dough primarily to make pizza. So they had faith and confidence in the product, and they got into the pizza business, not necessarily the bread baking business. So you can always say that if you're a baker of bread, you can make pizza, and that's technically a pizzeria. That's true.
Right.
But we're trying to isolate, really, the sort of the changing of the industry. And when that changeover happens, when the primary focus on a pizzeria is such that they're advertising for it, those are the guys we're trying to find out. And we think we found an earlier forgotten generation of them, which is really exciting. And we actually, for the first time, have hard data like ads in the newspapers, and we've done the genealogy, and we know that they were owners of it. So before, it was sort of a family folklore, that family stories would be passed down through the generations, and it, unfortunately, but understandably, they got distorted. So now we actually have hard information for the first time.
Huh. And so, wow. and that ends up, that's where this controversy comes from, is that this is a recent discovery by you pizza historians.
Right. I mean, actually, coming to New York, so I'm from Chicago, and I did this research about 9 years ago, and it was pretty much all over in the first 2 years. So I've been holding on to this story for like 7 years, bit of a procrastination. But so coming to New York and disclosing the story, it really hasn't been as big a deal as I thought it would be. I actually did think it would be a lot bigger deal and that there would be controversy about that. But so far, I mean, the pizzerias have sort of you know, it's a little bit of a shock to them, understandably, and they're going to have to change their understanding of their origin story. But beyond that, I think people have been fascinated about the new information, and they want to know more.
What is the year? So what year have you guys placed it at in New York City? Because I want to go back to the North End people and ask them to challenge you guys on it. So what year and what was the name of the place in New York?
Right. So it's a little bit complicated, but the previous story had been in 1905, Gennaro Lombardi started the first licensed pizzeria in the United States.
Yeah.
We can now say that that's almost certainly false because there's no record of him. In fact, there's records of other people at that same address owning a pizzeria.
Okay.
So that pizzeria I'm going to date most likely starting in 1898, the summer of 1898. Full stop there. That's that one location that we got new data on that we're sure is a pizzeria before 1905, because we have the 1904 ads for it, and I think it goes back all the way to 1898, the summer, with a man named Filippo Maloney. That's that location. There are other locations in New York City, and at the time they were separated into boroughs, so actually in the Brooklyn too, that were there before. And as you go back in time, as you can probably understand, the data and the rigorousness of like what the actual name of it was and who the owners were is a little bit fuzzy. But we've got one almost sure, well, 100%, we've got one in February of 1898 in Brooklyn, and that I think I've got one in Manhattan in 1895, probably this spring.
Okay, so we would have to...
We can probably much pretty sure say 1895 is the first pizzeria I've been able to identify in New York City.
So for the North End to try to take this from New York, which is my main mission here, it would have to be previous to 1895.
Yes, yeah. And this is an intriguing question, right? So yeah. Did the North End actually have it? Because they certainly have the same type of demographics in terms of the population coming from the same sections of Italy. They definitely had bakeries. There's a very interesting article that came out in the Boston Sunday Journal on 1903 that actually talks about the bakeries with pizza in the name of it in the window, and talks about the product in identical terms as we would understand a regular the pizzeria. So there was definitely something going on in Boston at that time period. In fact, I have a little bit of information on that I definitely have a pizzeria, official, no doubt about it, pizzeria in Boston by 1903 September.
I think that's those
and
guys.
And probably something before then.
Who are you saying?
Parziali's?
Yeah, Parziali's.
I remember them mentioning that year to me. But they, like in what you said in the beginning, Peter, see, they classify themselves as a bakery.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
That's probably
and the, article,
the difference.
Right, yeah. And the article I read on that, they had an establishment date of 1907, but mainly as a bakery, and then probably as a bakery that also sold the pizzas too. Okay.
Peter, as the world's foremost expert on pizza, what do you think of bar pizza?
Well, I'm not so comfortable with that title, but thank you. Bar pizza, I love it. That's the pizza that I grew up on in Chicago.
Okay.
So Chicago is known for deep dish, and everyone with the Super Bowl, if the Bears were ever in the Super Bowl, that would be on the block to trade with the other city. So they're identified with it. But really, bar pizza is a much more common type of pizza in Chicago.
Well,
so
I got to tell you, I thought Chicago was the deep dish.
Exactly. So that's when the tourists come into the near north side of Chicago. The obvious the pizzerias to go to are Pizzeria Uno or Lumonati's, and they are associated with that, and some of them are very, very good. But if you go out into the surrounding suburbs and in the neighborhoods where people in Chicago actually live, deep dish isn't actually that popular.
Aha.
It's basically bar the pizza.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, we have the South Shore here is where you would find Town Spa or any of those places, mm-hmm. Cape Cod,
yeah.
Emma's, right. what's his name?
Ron Emma's.
That's a similar thing here to just a suburb is where you find the legit orgasmic bar pizza, like the really good stuff. Where's the best slice you've ever had, Peter?
Where's the best slice I've ever had?
Yes.
Well, officially in the book, I'm agnostic, but I have to say Prince Street, the pizza in New York City is probably my favorite.
Really? I don't love
Is that place? Is it the Brooklyn place?
No, this is the one actually on Prince Street. It's, you know, just relatively new. It's sort of like a Sicilian cut of pizza, which is typically gets underrated, I think. If you make a good Sicilian, it's just outstanding. And people go gaga for the pepperoni on it, but my actual favorite is just the plain slice because the first sauce is just outstanding. So that's my favorite. Every time I come here, I go there. And but it's always crowded, so, you know, you have to go outside on the sidewalk to eat it. It's one of those deals because it's so tiny.
Where do you where do you stand on pineapple on pizza? on pizza?
Pineapple, yeah, big time. I've never actually had it, so I'm not really an expert, I guess. The story is that a Canadian, a Greek immigrant who settled in Canada started that. I'm not sure that that's true, but
it's true.
That's just one of those things that is, you know, the acidity and the salt go good together, I guess.
Well, it's, you know, Canada is a farming community. You know, there's a couple of big cities, but, you know, basically the whole country is small towns and farms, and everything is about cheapness. So everything was pork, which was bacon, and pineapple, and that's the Hammond pineapple, which is, you know, it's legendary in Canada.
Yeah. Peter, where do you stand on the Rhode Island tomato pie? Some people call that a pizza.
No.
But I don't call it a pizza because there's no cheese on it. It's just sauce.
No cheese.
Yeah, it's still delicious.
Is that the one that they call it strips instead of a slice?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to go there. I've never been. So, once again, I'm not an expert here.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, no, it sounds very intriguing. And what's really interesting is that when pizza started to become popular in the 30s with the marriage of sort of pizza and alcohol and beer, and the tavern started to acquire it as a secondary product, and then it became a primary product, you started to get this interesting variation in the ways that they call a pizza. So in some sections of the East Coast, they call it a tomato pie. In some sections of lower the New York State, they call an Italian hot pie or just a hot pie. So really interesting stuff of how you get the variations. But that's an old school type of the pizza where cheese was not the focus of the pizza. It was the tomatoes. But by the time it came to Chicago, Chicagoans love their cheese. So you're going to get a cheese pie at Chicago. But, yeah, that's old school, probably 1930s, the pizzas.
Now, Peter Regas is our guest. Peter, when you lecture at the Pizza Museum, what are the titles of some of your lectures?
Well, the title that I'm going to be focusing on is Filippo Maloney and the Forgotten Pizza Makers of New York City.
Okay.
And this was a guy in New York City who I stumbled upon, and at first I sort of dismissed him because in one of the censuses, it described him as a pastry maker. And I was like, I thought I had him. I thought he was a pizza guy. And then it struck me one day, like a month later, like, wait a minute. They called pizza pie back then, so maybe they told the census operator it was pie, and that's why he called it a pastry maker. And sure enough, it turns out to be true. He started three of the iconic the pizzeria in New York City. I judge him to start very likely six pizzerias in his 30-year career. He probably was a worker in a famous pizzeria in Naples before he came to the United States. And he was an elderly man, so he was born about 1862. So by the time he came here, he was 30 years old. He'd already been a worker in Naples. And just a very, very different sort of character than we're used to in the previous stories where it was a young guy who just thought, you know, to make a pizza or something like that. This guy came with some maturity and confidence in the industry. Unfortunately, I found his grave, and it's an unmarked grave, and he had no kids. So no one was there to really record his story until it sort of came out of the archives.
Buried in a pizza box?
Oh.
You know, we were thinking of putting a slice there and actually donating a stone for him. But, I don't think he had a pizza box.
Now, when you made your discovery, did you scream Eureka?
Oh. It was something like that. I was in the library, and I had to cover my mouth, but I knew immediately I found something major.
All right. Well, this has been very interesting. We are, as the rest of the country is, we are obsessed with pizza, so it is delightful to know that that this is in. I'm going to try to make the case for the North End.
Okay.
And
watch my blog. I'm going to have something on Boston pretty soon, and I've got some breaking the news on that. So I think you'll be interested in Boston. You're not going to be disappointed. I think they're going to holds up just fine.
What's a, how do we find your blog?
It's a pizza history book, one word, pizzahistorybook.com.
All right, Peter, thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Anybody else starving right now?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh my
I've been rolling through
I
my
smell
head.
It.
I'm like, I'm gonna have a slice of white pizza.
I know.
I'm gonna have a slice.
Oh, I'm so hungry.
Uh-huh.
When I was young, we used to go to DeAngelis Bakery in East Boston, which had the bakery pizza, which was like the tomato pie.
Right.
And my mom would often send me to school with a square of pizza for lunch, and
clearly.
All the kids that shut up. All the kids, yeah, okay, pot kettle.
The whole pizza, wow.
All the kids couldn't understand why my pizza didn't have cheese on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was used to that, like, growing up in my house with the Italian side of it, so I was like, why? Why is that weird?
Yeah.
It's just, that's how it is.
I like the sheet pizza. Like, you get that in the, like, the Twin Cities region of the Leominster and the Fitchburg.
Oh, yeah.
They do the big sheet pizzas.
Yeah, Papu's in Leominster.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
stuff.
We did the best bar pizza. We did the best North End. Maybe we should do the best sheet pizza thing next time we do it.
It sounds tough.
Like 900
but,
pounds.
Yeah, I guess we could.
Let's see. Here's an 857 text that says, I can't believe... You just glossed over the fact that LB was talking about farming pineapple in Canada. Well, I didn't want to get into it. It was derailed the whole thing.
First of all, you're putting words in my mouth.
What are you talking about?
Everybody was here for it.
I was talking about I grew up in Nipawin, Saskatchewan. Okay, and so the big thing is pigs. And
I know, but not pineapples. Those are from Hawaii.
That wasn't the point. The point is that in Canada, as the texter way, 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 way ago said, ham and pineapple pizza, that is massive in Canada. You know,
you were saying you guys, it's because the farmers didn't have anything else around except for pineapple and pork. So the pork ended up on the pizza.
I said that the farmers... have a ton of pork, and pineapple is something that Canadians love. Look at him. Does anybody else have a dad's best friend that owns a national chain? No. My dad's best friend owns Boston Pizza, a national chain.
Yeah.
Their most famous pizza is ham and pineapple.
Yeah. Well, how good can it
Canadians
be if they name it Boston Pizza?
Canadians grow up on ham and pineapple pizza, was my point. Again, I'm...
Canadians?
You're just an idiot. Oh, you know, of course, Canadians, they don't import pineapples from Hawaii. Where does everybody else get their pineapples?
Anybody else
grow up in the Okanagan Valley? Do some homework.
Nope.
Yeah, I used to pick apples off trees on the way to school. You know why? Because it's the apple orchard of Canada.
I guarantee you have...
Grab a pear.
I guarantee...
You can walk by a pear tree in the front yard of somebody's house on the way to school.
I guarantee you have some of those pineapple drink cups, though. I guarantee you have some of those.
I just love that you guys have all lived this sheltered life and have done nothing and think...
No,
like
I've had pineapple on my pizza.
Lived life.
All right.
I went to the Cape last week.
We got
to
get out of here.
Oh, boy. I took my whole family for 7 days. It was awesome.
We got to get out of here.
Why don't you try Greece? Why don't you try Finland? Why I don't know, Alaska?
Why don't you try South America?
Oh. You cheap ass.
What about
pricks.
Toronto, the pineapple capital of the world?
Toronto. You don't think Toronto imports pineapples?
Well, that would make it the capital, though.
Toronto's New York of Canada. Tons of pineapples go down up there.
We have to go, but tomorrow... At 7:30, it's Stowe 5-0, and we'll go inside the warped female brain at 7:50 tomorrow. And, of course, Friday, we're broadcasting from the new casino in Springfield, the MGM Casino. So,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.